Hello, this is your Polycast for Friday, October 14th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, nurses vote to end their strike, school funding measures are on the ballot this year, and Bob Dylan's teacher. More than 4,000 Alina nurses returned to work as soon as this weekend after ratifying a new contract last night. The vote ends a divisive 9-month bargaining process that resulted in 2 separate strikes. The first walkout in June lasted a week. The second one stretched to 37 days, just a day shy of a state nursing strike record set in 1984. The ratification comes days after the governor's office intervened in the dispute and called negotiators back to the bargaining table. Lorna Benson has more.
There wasn't much joy in the announcement from union leaders that their members had approved a new contract. After fighting for months to preserve their union-only health plans, nurses agreed to relinquish them and shift to Alina's less expensive corporate insurance. But Minnesota Nurses Association Executive Director Rose Roach said nurses did win an important concession.
While it's certainly nowhere near what the nurses deserve, nurses can hold their head high. They can rest easy knowing that they won a no-diminishment clause that ensures that the value of their health benefits won't be reduced in some future cost-cutting scheme.
Health insurance was a major sticking point throughout contract negotiations. Alina ultimately succeeded in moving nurses to its corporate insurance, but the company had to guarantee that the value of its most popular plan wouldn't change through 2021. Alina also agreed to put up to $2,500 in nurses' health reimbursement or health savings plans if they move into the corporate plans within that 5-year window. The union says the vast majority of nurses voted for the contract, but Roach said that doesn't mean they're ready to put this painful labor dispute to rest.
This certainly isn't the last time you will hear them speak. A contract isn't a suture, it's a Band-Aid. The wounds inflicted on the nurses since February will not heal overnight. The nurses have continually felt disrespected and devalued.
Alina said in a brief statement that it appreciated the nurses' ratification of the agreement. Ross Acevedo is Professor Emeritus of Industrial Relations at the University of Minnesota's Carlson Business School. He says hurt feelings will not go away easily, but time will help.
People do want to maintain a normal, what we might call normal relationship. And again, you can't hate forever. You can't fight forever. At some point, you got to go on and work with what's there.
Even though nurses lost a benefit that was important to them, and weeks of wages and health insurance, Acevedo believes they still emerged the winner in the labor fight. He says nurses didn't roll over when asked to give up a cherished benefit.
They've circled the wagons, they've put up a fence that's defended the position better than if they just simply caved into what the employer wanted.
But John Budd says nurses did lose. He's a labor relations expert at the University of Minnesota.
Ultimately, if you just look at sort of the bottom line and that who really got what they wanted, it was Alina.
The precedent set by the Alina contract could have ripple effects for other Minnesota hospitals. Other union nurses at other hospital systems still have union-only health plans. Budd says those hospitals face the same health insurance pressures and are likely looking for ways to reduce costs, too.
I think that's something to clearly watch for, whether those hospitals will be content to keep going with the status quo and the existing plan, or whether they'll look to the Alina settlement and say, you know, Alina was able to, get away from that plan, and we want to do the same thing.
For the other large hospital systems in the Twin Cities, including Fairview and Healtheast, those contract discussions are still 2 years away. In the meantime, Alina's union nurses are expected to be back on the job soon at United, Unity, Mercy, and Abbott Northwestern Hospitals and the Phillips Eye Institute. Covering health, I'm Lorna Benson, Minnesota Public Radio News.
With all the interest in the presidential race, another question on some voters' ballots isn't getting nearly as much attention. Every fall, some school districts ask voters to approve taxes that can make up a big part of their district's budget. The number of those measures on ballots hit a 32-year low this year. Districts that are asking are working to be heard over the noise, Solveig Wastvedt reports.
Pop quiz. How many news stories about a presidential candidate have you heard this week? Now, how many stories have you heard about a school tax referendum? The difference there is exactly why only 28 school districts have so-called operating levy referendums up for consideration this year.
It's a very hard thing to do because you get drowned out by the 14 bazillion stories on Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton.
Greg Abbott is communications director for the Minnesota School Boards Association, which compiled the total. Minnesota districts have to get voter approval for taxation that exceeds a state-determined limit. Every few years, they need to come back to renew or increase that approval.
If you can't get your message out on why you need the money, people don't vote on something that they don't know where the money's going to.
Districts can also ask for money for buildings. Abbott says 10 districts have those bond referendums on the ballot this fall, which is also lower than usual. He says increases in state funding and the fact that many districts passed tax measures recently could also be driving the decrease. Minneapolis is one of the few districts with a tax proposal on the November ballot.
By the end of the week, there'll be, I think, 1,700 lawn signs in circulation.
Referendum campaign manager Donald McFarland says the district is asking for a renewal of its current levy with no projected tax increase. Still, like many Minnesota districts, Minneapolis depends on the referendum money. McFarland says it makes up about 13% of the district budget.
If this referendum doesn't pass, each school will be hit with huge cuts, insurmountable cuts.
McFarland says canvassers with the Minneapolis DFL party have been distributing referendum information. That's part of why he says he's actually not worried about getting the message out in the middle of a presidential race.
Voters in Minneapolis, I think, are pretty clear on who their presidential pick is. And so we're able to quickly pivot to what else is on the ballot, and that's really this referendum.
Minneapolis has had referendum success in past presidential years. In 2008, voters nearly doubled the per-pupil amount raised through its operating referendum levy. But in other districts, it's a different story. North St. Paul Maplewood Oakdale has a proposal up this year to raise taxes by $630 a student. Superintendent Christine Osorio says the district hasn't increased its operating levy since 2002. She says it is hard to compete with the presidential noise, but her district has faced budget cuts the last 2 years that are starting to raise class sizes.
Even though it's a presidential year, we just didn't feel like we could take a year off and not try to push this forward because it's really that important for us.
Osorio's district ranks in the bottom third of metro area districts for how much operating referendum money it collects per student. In fact, there's a big disparity statewide in money coming from voter-approved taxes. Some school districts boost their state funding by several thousand dollars per student, while others only collect a few hundred dollars a student. The state makes up for some of this gap with other kinds of funding. Disparities spiked in 2013, but since then have narrowed to smaller than they've been in decades. Covering education, I'm Solveig Wastvedt, Minnesota Public Radio News.
The world is honoring Bob Dylan not for his music, but for his lyrics. The legendary songwriter was awarded the Nobel Prize in Literature yesterday. Dylan was born in Duluth and spent most of his childhood in Hibbing on the Iron Range. Dan Crocker went looking for Dylan's literary roots in the North Country.
In calling around Duluth and Hibbing for a reaction to Dylan winning the Nobel Prize for Literature, people kept talking about a man named B.J. Rolfson, a former English teacher at Hibbing High School.
Early in his career, he had a student named Robert Zimmerman who sat in the front row right in front of where he taught.
Aaron Brown teaches communications at Hibbing Community College, and for 13 years, he co-chaired the Dylan Days Festival in Hibbing.
And he was this gentle man who loved poetry and preached poetry almost like a religion.
Robert Zimmerman, who later, of course, changed his name to Bob Dylan, caught that religion in 10th grade English class. Linda Strobeck was a friend of Rolfson, who died in 2009. For nearly 30 years, she owned the restaurant Zimmy's in Hibbing.
He just was magic. You know, you could see where someone like a young Robert Zimmerman coming from here to have BJ teaching him poetry and literature would be inspired and, you know, create his own language and poetry.
Rolfson was also witness to the first time Dylan showed his rock and roll side at a talent show at Hibbing High. He told that story to Heidi Holton of KAXE Northern Community Radio in Grand Rapids.
He was beating on this piano, and then the curtain closed. So I went back to my room, and he came about 5 minutes later and sat down in his chair again And he looked at me. I remember distinctly. He looked at me with kind of a smile on his face.
Rolfson later learned the principal had pulled the curtain on him because, in his view, he didn't consider it music. Rolfson taught English in Hibbing for 30 years, first at the high school, then at the community college. And for years, he would politely speak to journalists, filmmakers, and fans who yearned to hear stories of a young Dylan.
When people would come here and say, "Aren't you proud of Bob Dylan?" he would say, "I'm proud of all my students." And he meant that. But right now, if he knew, and hopefully he does know that this happened, that this Nobel Prize was awarded to Bob Zimmerman, he would be beyond tickled. He wouldn't believe that it could happen, and he'd be thrilled.
Dylan considered Rolfson a mentor and would visit him when he came back through Hibbing, says Nelson French, who grew up in Hibbing, just a block away from the Zimmermans. French now lives in Duluth, where he helps put on Dylan Fest.
The other thing, too, is that his words touch us with great feelings about humanity. You start off Desolation Row with "They're selling postcards of the hanging."
They're selling postcards of the hanging. They're painting the passports brown. The beauty parlor is filled with sailors. The circus is in town.
And I think all of us in Duluth now know what that was about. There was a lynching in the 1920s of three black men who were traveling with a circus just off of Superior Street.
Duluth and Hibbing have long had a complicated relationship with the famous musician. He's rarely spoken of his childhood, so local fans cling to references like "In Desolation Row" or "Highway 61 Revisited." Duluth has designated a Bob Dylan cultural pathway through the city and hosts Dylan Fest. But in Hibbing, there's little to indicate Dylan's past there. Zimmy's closed 2 years ago, and Dylan Days disbanded the following year. But Aaron Brown hopes the Nobel Prize may spark a renewed interest in the homegrown musical icon.
Because really what this award is just an acknowledgement of the global impact of this guy from Hibbing, who really changed the music industry, changed the act of songwriting, made it more personal, made it more artistic. And a very great opportunity for the Iron Range and Duluth to claim their most famous son.
Or as Linda Strobeck puts it, the award shows how out of somewhere very unexpected came someone who could put words to all our feelings. Covering the arts, I'm Dan Crocker, Minnesota Public Radio News, Duluth.
And that's your Polycast for this Friday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. Have a great weekend, and I'll see you again here next week.